The Lock-In Podcast is brought to you by Rotocloud, the all-in-one solution for managing hospitality teams. Rotocloud lets you plan and share rotas, record attendance, and manage your team's annual leave, all in less time than it takes to make a brew. It also makes life easier for your staff, allowing them to check their rotas, request annual leave, and even pick up extra shifts, all through the Rotocloud mobile app. Start your 30-day free trial today by visiting rotocloud.com/lock-in. Hello and welcome to the Lock-In Podcast, the show that lifts the lid on the realities of life in the pub trade. I'm the morning advertiser's Ed Beddington, and with me as ever are my trusty co-hosts, Heath Ball and James Cuthbertson. Heath has been working in hospitality ever since his little hobbit feet could touch the ground, so since he was about 30. James, on the other hand, is newer to the hospitality sector, having previously been sacked from every other profession. I mean, you're nodding. I mean, is that agreement?
I think internationally it's agreement, yeah.
I thought I'd change it up rather than sort of pretend you were experts
and
undermine you. So. No appreciation. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and please do like and share on social media. And feel free to drop us a line at the MA to get us to tackle the topics you'd like to hear. So guys, I don't know about you two, but it's beginning to feel like we're at a bit of a crossroads or perhaps a cliff edge for the sector at the moment. So in this episode, we're going to be tackling some of those topical issues that everyone in the trade has been talking about, the ongoing uncertainty over June the 21st and what that means for the sector, the ongoing row around smoking outside of pubs, the ongoing challenges around staffing, and the ongoing challenges around supply. So lots of ongoing challenges in there. We'll be speaking to some great guests throughout the podcast, including the British Beer and Pub Association's Emma McClarkin, and getting the supplier view from John Graves at Bibendum. We'll also be discussing the staffing crisis with hospitality recruitment specialist James Ellis-Smith of One Avenue. But before we get into all of that, let's discuss the really important issues. James, you fell off a ladder the other day.
Tremors were felt.
I did. I felt it, and I live about 2 miles away.
Well, it wasn't my best work, should we say.
How, talk us through it.
I'm no Billy Elliot. I landed with a bit of a thump. I was just an idiot, really. I've done my ladder course, my ladder safety course.
Right,
money well spent, clearly.
Yes.
And I just fell off, really.
What were you doing up the ladder at the time?
I was trying to get up.
Right.
And I got down quicker than I got up.
Yeah.
So
no, Humpty Dumpty springs to mind.
I was just trying to help, which was great.
And what were you carrying whilst you were up this ladder?
Beer.
And how did the beer survive the fall?
It didn't. It covered me. So after I finished licking myself...
I mean, there's things called showers and baths, but...
Yeah, you might want to keep the image away from everyone else. But thank you for bringing it up again.
Yeah, no
could
problem.
Could have been very serious, actually, Ed. You made light of it, but could have been very serious.
I did check beforehand that you were okay.
You did.
Briefly. No, I laughed a lot, to be fair, when I heard.
That's exactly what
I
did here.
I maybe thought in my head I should check he's okay.
No, you didn't. It's just nasty.
And Heath, you've actually spent some time with the family. You've been away. I mean, how was that?
Yeah. It was... It's not really a holiday, is it? Like going away with your family. I'd rather be at Guantanamo Bay. I think I'd get more sleep. My wife has this thing, because I'm not at work, that I should be responsible for the early mornings of the kids. So I'm not really getting a holiday. I'd rather be at work.
What, like being a dad?
I hate being a dad. It's fucking painful. Tell me.
I love that you embrace the responsibilities of fatherhood.
Yeah. Well, we went away, and then it was quite lovely. We were out in Salisbury somewhere, and... You know, it just seeing every pub you go to just oversubscribed, packed, you can't get food orders. It was carnage. So it's frustrating as an operator going out because you're always looking at what people are doing. But when you get sat down at a table and told, we'll be right with you in 35 minutes later, you're still sitting there waiting for drinks.
So from home.
Piss off. And you can't go to the bar and get them. You almost want to cry. And then you order food and it's another 40-50 hour, you know what I mean? And you've got two kids with you. It's just, it's not fun. So yeah, it was, yeah, it wasn't relaxing.
You were getting up and sort of lending a hand behind the bar. Yeah,
mate. The thing is, I walk in the I can go and pay inside. It was bar, it was pub. So I walk in to go and pay, and all the staff having a lovely little meeting, chatting away about how busy it's been. No masks on, just bouncing around the place. Yeah, it was great. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, but the problem is the kids, they don't know any better and there's no one directing them. So, you know, it's not their fault, but, you know, it could have been a lot sharper.
I mean, I love the fact that you are the master of social media, aren't you? And you looking at your social media feed, it looks like you had the best time ever.
I didn't put anything on social media.
Maybe it was your wife.
It was my wife. Yeah, it wasn't me.
I must admit, my wife saw it and said, that's lovely, where are they? And then when I told her how much it was at night, she kind of quickly changed her mind. So that was something.
But it was lovely, but yeah, like, I didn't, yeah.
So which bits were lovely, particularly? Because the general feedback I'm getting, not just from these Mickey Mouse headphones, is that it wasn't lovely. But, you know, let's go through the highlights.
Apparently, it's memories for the children.
Ah, right? When their dad's dead, they've got nice pictures. Yeah,
you can't remember it because you were too drunk, is that what it is?
No, hold on, what fucks me off is... My life's nearly over, right? I'm running out of time here. I should be enjoying myself. Mm-hmm. They should have to suffer and do what I want to do and be quiet because I'm dead soon, right? I'm running out of time here. I should be trying to please them and give them a good time. Mm-hmm. I've got the whole life ahead of them to be happy. I don't. I should have gone away by myself. That's what should have happened. That's what should have been allowed.
That's probably what they would have wanted by the end of the weekend.
I was going to say, it's.
I never drank.
They took a vote.
Did you drink down there?
I drank a lot. I was doing breakfast drinking. I just had enough. I couldn't do it.
Sounds like the Scotland trip next month.
Yeah.
Well, let's maybe draw a line and move on from that. Great British Pub Awards has been launched. So I thought I'd go for a shameless plug.
I saw that today.
Yeah, I thought we'd give that a shameless plug. Heath, you were a past winner of that. So, you know, is it worth entering?
Oh, yes.
I set myself up for that, really. Wasn't
yeah, yeah, it, yeah. It's yeah, well worth it. God, that was years ago. That was, 3 years ago?
Feels like a lifetime, doesn't it?
It does. I had hair back then. No, I didn't.
No, I've never had hair.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, it's going to be interesting this year. How are you doing it? You're doing it virtually? Are you doing it?
Bit of both. There'll be a virtual sort of event and then an after party. So we're breaking up. We'll do a segment of it and then a live event as well. Okay. So yeah, it's going to be hybrid, I think is the term that people are using these days. So
any new categories?
We've got a dog friendly category, which I'm sure you'll be delighted to see. And
my dog's doing my head in, so forget that one.
Children friendly?
No. Children, we do have family pub. Family pub, yeah. That's one for you, Heath.
Those who survived it through lockdown and haven't like had a breakdown, that'd be a good
not
one.
Not quite like that. Yeah. But all the details are on the Morning Advertiser's website, so I urge you all to go there, enter. It is worth it. It genuinely is worth it.
No, definitely.
You did benefit from it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Won. Oh, yeah, yeah. Bought a new car.
I thought that was worth a grand. Other news, let's move on from that as well. Other news, it seems like vaccine passports appear to have been killed off. Are you pleased?
I was watching the parliamentary TV thing with Kate Nichols yesterday. And watching all that going on, I was listening to the guy from the travel sector, and he was saying even if we had vaccine passports, they're not worldwide accepted. So there'd have to be a worldwide agreement on travel to have all the countries to have the same vaccine passport. And necessarily not our NHS at one. So thank God. I think it'd just be a shit show.
What was the thing you sent yesterday with the kind of restaurant with kind of inside vaccinated inside?
Oh, I was in New York. Outside. At a sign, those who were vaccinated would go inside. Those who weren't vaccinated, they'd go outside.
Yeah.
You know, it was in Manhattan, I think. Yeah,
well, I mean, that's been the argument against it all throughout, hasn't it? That it'll create that sort of discriminatory process. Those that can't have it or for valid reasons haven't been able to get it. I'm particularly young. I know they're starting to get to younger people now.
Well, mentioned you're pregnant.
Well, yeah, pregnant, if you're breastfeeding, any of these things where, you know, you've got a child and there's a risk that you're not too happy about. Yeah, it's...
It's probably a good thing. They'll try and bring it back again in the future, I suppose, but...
No, I think it was one of the things that would never work, and they've made us feel that we should be grateful they didn't bring it in. One of those.
I don't trust this government.
I think you've demonstrated that many times. You'd rather be in North Korea, so...
I still haven't been invited. I do massive shout-outs, so much I like the food, people, the haircuts. I'd love to move there.
Well, no, it's that black van just driven up outside. And finally, I think the one thing that we can't not
other
mention...
Other colours of vans are available, obviously.
Well, indeed, yes. Thank you for that woke comment there, James. The one thing that we can't avoid entirely discussing is Tim Martin. This week announced that he would like to see EU workers allowed back into the country.
He needs to be taken out and beaten. What a plonker. Seriously. Like, just... Yeah, now it's affected his bottom line. Oh, shit. Actually, I need staff to make money. Oh, my God. Mm. Now he's having a panic? Piss off, Tim.
Mm. I mean, there's a delicious irony to it, isn't there? And I think the chief cheerleader for Brexit is now wants migrants back in.
I'm
sure he can justify it in his own way, and he will, but it doesn't
age well, that comment, does it, really?
No.
Where he went, yeah.
But it won't, because if you think you're an Indian national, do you want to work for a guy who voted for people like you not to be in the country? Mm. Why would you go and work for that guy?
Mm. If you knew about it, really, because, you know, I don't know, we talked about this the other day, didn't we, about the jobs and this and working hard in this industry, and it's just so many people just aren't cut out for it. The snowflake guys just aren't interested. Mm-hmm. We're having a conversation about like naan breads and ovens and 600 degree ovens, and would you have your kid slapping the naan on the inside of the oven? No, you wouldn't. So actually, you need people coming in that will do it.
You need expendable people that you can bring in, and it's not what you're saying.
Who was the American politician who said we should be encouraging people? Give people jobs who left their lives in their home country for whatever reason, South America, walked across Central America to get to America to get a job to raise money for a better standard of life for their family. Mm. Those people want to work.
Yeah,
they,
real gumption.
The Home Office, that statement the Home Office put out, they said they want employers to look for British workers to train and bring a British workforce in. Shows you how detached the Home Office are. Mm. British people, sorry guys, you don't want to wash pots. You don't want to do the jobs.
Well, we aren't going to talk about this later on, so that is a taster of one of Heath's rants to come, I suspect. We'll be talking about staffing, we'll be talking about supplies, all sorts of things, but for the moment, let's leave that there. You're listening to the Lock-In Podcast, and with us today we've got the BVPA CEO Emma McClarkin joining us to chat about some of the challenges we're facing, chiefly the uncertainty that's currently going on. So hello, Emma.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for joining us. So, I mean, we've got the Times telling us that the government is going to extend it by 2 weeks. And let's face it, when it comes to leaks, the government pretty much puts the Titanic to shame. How accurate do you think that is?
Well, they've gone very, very quiet, I have to say, almost clam-like in terms of the dialogue with officials around the announcement on the 14th of June. Of course, we are pressing hard for the removal of those restrictions and then sticking to their own roadmap by the 21st of June. It's so important to the recovery of the sector, to the confidence for the sector. And so, yeah, it's very disappointing that we keep hearing through the media and not through any of our official channels very latest about where they're at.
I mean, I did see that your colleagues in UK hospitality said this morning, or I think to MCA actually, that their reading of it and the conversations that they've been having, that they're actually confident that the day will stand and the 21st will be there. I mean, are you picking that up as well, or do you think that's maybe just a bit misplaced?
Listen, I think we have to be prepared for whatever's coming down the road. I think the Prime Minister is very determined to go ahead with the 21st of June, but of course he's surrounded by people saying he should do the exact opposite. So how resolute he'll feel come the 14th of June, and whatever data it is that they're waiting for, because they won't even tell us what it is that they're waiting for by the 14th of June, you know, I hope that we can be more confident. But right now, with all the media swirling around, it's very, very difficult to know which source to trust.
I mean, and one of your members, what sort of feedback are you getting from your members on this? I mean, what's the consensus? I mean, I'll probably predict this because Heath and James will probably quite happily rant endlessly about it. But I mean, are you getting much from membership?
Oh, hugely, yeah. No, you can definitely feel it's hotting up these weeks in the countdown. Our campaign, The Countdown to Freedom, is going great guns. We've got our full membership right behind us. It's absolutely critical to our businesses that we get this removal and we stick to these dates. as I say, we're trading 20% down. It's costing us that. Of course, those 2 weeks of the extension or probable extension would fall within the second half of the Euros, which we were hoping was going to be able to be maximised as an opportunity for us to boost our revenue in this very delicate period of recovery. So we'll lose even more than we ordinarily would through those, particularly those 2 weeks. It is a very difficult period of time, but you know, we've got the message clear out there. We've got other people like the CRG standing square behind us and saying it's time to get back to business. And yeah, we're just keep pushing and stay hopeful.
I mean, the uncertainty isn't helping, is it? I mean, James Heath, what, I mean, how are you finding it? I know, James, you're a little bit sort of, you're doing all right at the moment, but I mean, how do you feel about sort of that uncertainty and whether you're going to get back up to?
Honestly, it's more of a, at the minute, the biggest issue is wearing a mask is probably the biggest issue just for the team, and, you know, telling customers off because they forget, which fair enough. But, you know, every 10 minutes, feel like a school teacher telling them off. So if that was removed, that would be great. But, like, in terms of financially, we've bounced back nicely, we've been busy. It's the late night guys I feel really sorry for, because that's just carnage for them. You know, if that's any part of your business, then you must just feel exasperated. But I think for a standard pub of a decent size and with an outside area, enjoying decent trade.
I mean, what about you, Heath?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, I echo that as well. I think up at the Red and Highgate, we're busy. Yeah. We've got more control over what's going on. We're not having to deal with large booking inquiries. It's sort of, it's manageable, but it's still, you're running at huge staff costs right now. Like, you've got so many people doing stuff that you just don't need, you know what I mean? So wage bills are higher, but I can't see the government dropping it anytime soon. I think we're all dreaming if they are.
I mean, Emma, what are you hearing from your members in terms of sort of the restrictions and trade? I was in a pub the other day up in the northwest, and it's a small community focused pub in a sort of just off a city centre, and he's feeling the pain. I mean, he's not had the customers come back. He's struggling. He's having to adapt his opening hours just to, you know, cover his costs and things like that. It's not easy. And yes, I think for certain operators, you know, you bounce back and you're busy, but for others,
the Wenlock, we opened that. That's a real ale pub in Hoxton. We're only opening it Thursday, Friday, Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
There's no one around.
Yeah.
It's dead. We opened it the weekend, it was a waste of time.
Yeah. So I mean, Emma, I think from your perspective, your members, I guess that end to restrictions has got to be key, hasn't it? Because it's not sustainable to carry on like this.
Absolutely. And, you know, it is labour intensive. The staff that we have, you know, got on our books at this moment in time are working their socks off. They really are. And then there are members, you know, small guys, having to employ extra staff to run their pub. And they're still trading at way below viable trading levels, but yet their costs are increasing. It's untenable. And this is the situation, is that if we want to really talk about the recovery, that only starts when these restrictions are removed. And the difference is also, Ed, like where you are based in the city, as you say, you know, and he said it's dead. So, you know, why would you open on some of those days? But then we have other pubs that have to limit themselves and limit their service because they simply cannot get the staff to work those shifts. So it's a real delicate point that we're at here in our reopening before we even start the
It's always, every time we do this, you get an ambulance or a fire engine flying past, Heath. I mean, I blame you personally for it.
Yeah. I mean, but it's also ultimate. Think about this, right? We're supposed to have the restrictions lifted on the 21st of June, whatever. What about business rates? They all start back up then as well. Not at full whack, but we're still, you know, I mean, they haven't even spoken about that. Like, if they're going to push it back, are they pushing back business rates? What's happening?
I mean, are you getting anything on that, Emma? Is that something that's on your radar?
Well, listen, if they are going to delay the removal of restrictions, then we need to talk about extending business rates relief. We've got businesses that will start paying full rates in July and in a matter of weeks. So the reality is that we need to have some serious conversations. Those serious conversations about support packages are very, very, you know, back of a beer coaster,
okay.
We'll say. discussions. They're not in depth, but we do need to address that because we need fundamental reform. are trading nowhere near your usual or viable trading levels. How on earth are we going to be able to start affording to pay the business rate to pay?
Emirate, a question, as James said, just about sort of, I guess, our engagements of trade with the government. The last restrictions that came in to stop us selling takeaway beer, for example, takeaway alcohol, seemed to be a direct attack on the pubs. Do you think we've been affected and been listened to, or is the government out of touch with the industry?
I think that it is started to reduce its consultation, and we saw that happen dramatically last autumn. And it's going to make huge fundamental errors if it doesn't have full consultation with industry. And it's this obsession with keeping as much details as quiet until they're ready to announce whatever it is. But it extends to other parts of their teams. You know, you speak to very senior people, I have to say, in number 10, and they simply don't know what's going to happen on Monday. And that's the reality of the situation, that key people still don't have the detail on it. But they are showing that they have a fundamental misunderstanding of how we operate as a business, and all of these impacts that they're having on us, they don't genuinely understand it because they haven't understood our business model.
No, that's very true, and I think that it's been sort of clear all the way through with the actions they've taken. I mean, the other thing as well is the Welsh situation. I mean, what's your take on that? Because, I mean, this sort of has just happened, hasn't it, really? But Mark Drakeford in Wales has said that we're going to be living... He's not going to lift restrictions, regardless of what England does. And he can't see them lifting social distancing whilst COVID is still around, which, I mean, as far as we can tell, that's pretty much for the rest of our lives, then, is it not? What's your take on that? I mean, your members... I mean, you've got members in Wales. They must be...
We have the Welsh Beer and Pub Association, and you know, we're trying to strengthen our voice there as well. But the reality is that it seems to be a competition in our devolved administrations as to who can be the most cautious, or who can, you know, dislike alcohol the most between them. Frankly, it is enormously frustrating, and to say that based on nothing, you know, based on what, it is hugely damaging to the economy and poor Wales. You know, they seem to undermine the contribution that hospitality makes to their tourism offer. And that, you know, they really depend heavily on tourism. And if they cannot get some of that this season back by having the offer of hospitality on the doorstep, then, you know, they'll really be, you know, tying themselves up economically for a very long period of time. But as I say, it seems to be a competition where people flex their independent administration muscles the greatest. And that's something that we've found through the pandemic. We're going to have to focus on our engagement with the devolved administration's far greater.
So it's almost, yeah, to put it vulgar, it's become a bit of a pissing contest, hasn't it, between those guys, which... It's infuriating. If we don't get the restrictions, if we don't get that 21st date and they push it back, I mean, what are you guys asking for to help keep the trade going and afloat?
Yeah, well, we absolutely have already asked them for an extension on the business rates relief and that taper, taking away of that taper so that we can benefit from longer. Let's not forget, we still have 2,300 pubs that haven't been able to open their doors since they closed because they cannot fulfil the mitigation of social distancing. Many of those in our city centres and in London where I am today. And, you know, they need to keep supplying people with support funds to keep ticking over in the background if they're not even able to open their doors. Those restart grants have long gone.
Yes, yeah. I'm conscious of time. We haven't touched on it yet, but let's quickly talk about the various kind of restrictions that seem to be coming in around smoking. I mean, what the hell's going on? I mean, is it that they thought that things aren't hard enough for pubs at the moment, and they thought, you know what, let's find another way to really just piss them off a little bit more? What's happening?
I think everybody is using this moment and their little bit of power that they've maybe been given more to make these decisions at some more local levels. Everyone's using this moment to flex those muscles, but it's absolutely the wrong time to be layering this on an industry that is on its knees. And we've asked the government to say, you know, they're looking at a hospitality strategy. And we've said, well, great, do a whole period of deregulation. and do not layer on any new legislation whatsoever or regulation that's going to have a negative impact on our industry. But, you know, people are seeming to make very, very bizarre decisions using this moment of time to get things by stealth. And we have to push back on it. And, you know, it should be a choice of a venue if they choose to do so. It should not be mandated, and particularly not mandated at this moment in time. So, yeah, we're very, very disappointed to see that being introduced.
And I guess the question as well is, who's going to police it? Because if it's outside the pub, you know, we've already got the problems with being sort of short of staff, people not necessarily being able to control everything that's going on. Whose job is it to stop people smoking outside your pub, Heath?
They'll find a way. Trust me, the council will find a way. We just get, honestly, it's too much. But like when we had that conversation with Kate Nichols, she told me to be mean, stop so parochial. Do you know what I mean? Like, how can you not get upset with this? We're getting attacked.
It does feel targeted. It does feel like it's
targeted attacks. If they don't like pubs in this country, put your hand up and say, we don't want pubs anymore. We want a European drinking culture. We want everybody to sit down. We want them to eat. And we want them to behave themselves. Say that then. At least we know where we are.
Because it is where we're heading, isn't it? I mean, totally. We're already finding that our business has changed massively in the last year, haven't we?
Use COVID as a perfect cover to change the way British drinking culture is.
You
it's
like
disgusting.
The customers sitting down, though, James. Hmm? You like the customers sitting down.
I do, because I'm the same height.
No, it has worked. It's been good for business, and it's made you to control the business.
Yeah, but it's not good for all our businesses.
No.
That's the problem. Our drink-led pubs, wet-led pubs.
You need the choice.
You
it's
need people
choice.
Standing up drinking.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think I'm disgusted in the government's behaviour.
Well, I think let's park that one there for now. But Emma, thank you very much for that. Some really good thoughts there.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Lock-In Podcast, and we're now going to take a look at the suppliers' challenges at the moment. We're starting to hear increasing stories of operators struggling to source products and challenges around delivery, all those kind of things. So we've got John Graves, on-trade channel director with Bibendum, joining us now to give us his views on how they're finding the situation. John, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Absolute pleasure, Ed. Nice to see you.
You too, sir. So, I mean, just give us your perspective. You know, what's happening from your point of view at the moment?
It's a massive question, Ed. And there are lots of different answers, but I'll start. Why don't I just start at the
start at the beginning?
Source.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
So I'll start at the source. We've had an on-trade that has been essentially. Apart from a few entrepreneurs, couldn't mention any, but I know one or two, we've managed to work throughout the lockdown. But essentially, we've had a trade that's been closed for a year. We've had a workforce in that trade that hasn't been working, some of which has disappeared, and some of which has not been allowed to live in the country anymore because of some strange political decision made by a few people in the country.
We did say we weren't going to talk about politics or religion, John. You've already transgressed that first one.
I think this is common sense, not politics. When I talk about hospitality, when I talk about suppliers, I'm talking about the same thing here. So whatever difficulties I'm having at the moment, my customers are having exactly the same problems. And whatever expectations my customers have, my customers' customers also have those expectations. So it's a difficult time. So we are really, really struggling as an industry to get people. And that is a fundamental issue at the moment. And it's not really been talked about a lot. I hear it talked about in isolation, in conversations. We don't really have water cooler conversations, do we? Really, we have
Zoom conversations.
We have line cleaner conversations and things like that. But the difficulty is throughout the industry, and that goes from your front of house guy, your pot washer, all the way down to the guy picking stock in the warehouse, all the way down to the hauliers who are taking, say, wine from Sicily and trying to get it to the UK to be serviced. Serviced? You don't do that with wine, do you? I don't service wine, but I do sometimes. Generally, we drink wine. And we try and sell it and probably make a margin on it, as we're all trying to do. So that is a huge problem.
Yeah.
And we are as a trade, desperately trying to recruit people at the moment, and I've seen some of the work that's going on in the background to recruitment, and it's pretty staggering actually. And it's really hard, and it's hard to fix quickly. And I think despite the fact that we've all known lockdown's going to finish, we've not been in a position where we can recruit people because we weren't able to, because we've had people on furlough, and you can't recruit people when you've got people on furlough. So it's a bit of a perfect storm there. I said I wasn't going to talk about politics, but I will talk about Brexit and what it's done. I mean, obviously, I think the hospitality industry, as in the operators, saw the problem coming with not being able to get front of house staff, chefs, bar staff.
Tim Martin didn't.
Tim Martin probably couldn't see further than his... I nearly swore then. He's a great customer.
Never holds
really
teeth
like
back.
Him.
Yeah, he's a fucker.
But you know, he didn't see it coming. I think people that I know in the industry saw it coming. What I didn't see coming was the knock-on effect. And the knock-on effect trying to get warehouse people, drivers, sort of thing. I didn't see that coming. What I did see coming, and we knew about, was how difficult it was going to be to get stock into the country. So, I mean, no business in the trade worth its salt would have spent a fortune buying stock in February this year, when we had no idea what was going to happen. You know, infection rates were up in the 50,000 a day. You know, were you going to go and order a load of stock from Italy then? I wasn't, and I don't think anyone else would. I'm sure if Heath and James are on the call, I mean, you know, Heath, you were probably the only person in the world filling up his cellar. I don't think anyone else was.
That was just for his own consumption, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I was going to say that's because he's drinking it so far.
Yeah.
So you had that massive problem where we knew Brexit had happened. We weren't able to fill up our depots. We had residual stock from the small openings that we had last summer and then the pre-Christmas debacle. But that it was residual stock, and we've had to scramble to get stock into the warehouses, and it is taking forever. I was chatting with a rosé producer the other day who has had 9 failures in a row from hauliers trying to get his stock into the UK. Now, can you imagine that, you know, if there's one person getting 9 failures in a row, that's 9 days in a row. He's there with his stock, ready to go. It didn't arrive.
Right.
So every time that happens, then up the chain goes another big problem. You know?
Yes.
So it doesn't come to the distributor, it doesn't go to the warehouse, doesn't go to the restaurant, and the customer doesn't have it on their table. So
let's bring in James and Heath on this then. I mean, are you starting to find this? Are you struggling to get product?
I think we're very fortunate. Well, I'm very fortunate of years of building relationships. I've been a sole supplier for our businesses, and I'm quite lucky. I know who to call, and I can speak direct with suppliers, and I can hustle about. And we also have the advantage: we don't use a laminated, boring menu. We print daily on A4, and we can adapt and change our menu to suit what's in stock. So, you know, we're not bound by some big, you know, like, oh God, we've got 50,000 menus that have been printed, all laminated, that we can't adapt. So we can move quick on our feet. And I think that's worked to our advantage. And if John doesn't have a certain product, a certain Malbec, for example, we just change the Malbec.
But you're finding the challenge is finding certain products still there.
Yeah, there's obviously, I think, you know, John said some products aren't getting to the country. So all we're doing is just whatever they've got next. And we're just picking that up and then rolling with that. And we just keep on rolling with the bunches.
Yeah,
I think but it's not just them. I'm speaking to my fish supplier down in Cornwall. They can't take on any more business. They're struggling to keep up demand. No one's on holiday, and everyone's on holiday in the UK, so everyone's stretched, and no one can keep up. Like, I just think and the problem is customers don't care. They want a good time. They want it now, and they want their bottle of rosé on the table.
So
it's hard.
So we've got, I mean, it's almost a tsunami of problems at the moment, isn't it? We've got sort of restrictions on stuff coming into the country, and we've got huge internal demand that probably wouldn't be there normally, because people would have buggered off to Portugal or Tenerife or whatever, and they're here now. So
But as John said, none of us work in the futures market there, because everyone's just trying to survive and, you know, not spend money.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I've got to say, can I just say, guys, from my point of view, and I know I'm not supposed to talk about my business on this, and quite rightly, but I will say that, I mean, we were amazingly looked after by our business over lockdown and under furlough, and I think, you know, we're going to pay that back to them, but. And I think a lot, you know, it's pretty apparent the people that looked after their staff under furlough. I know Heath and James did, and you can see that now. When I went up to Heath's place the other day, when I had about 30 seconds to spare in my life of misery, I was amazed to see the same faces. It was absolutely brilliant. You know, the same faces that I saw 18 months ago, or however long ago it was, and saw them.
John, what are the solutions then from your perspective? What should operators be thinking? I mean, Heath, you came up with a good one there, being a bit more flexible around your offer, maybe being vague on your menus. I think that was the gist I got from that.
So just
red wine
if you print your menu yourself, you can print it daily, you adapt.
Yeah.
And that's just easier. But
not a solution for everyone. But
yeah, but then just, you know, I'm sure you can do a workaround.
Yeah.
Here's today's menu. You know?
I think he's hit a really good point here, you know, and I wish that more people had his business model that they could do. But, you know, we have outside of the sort of what I would call quality casual dining that Heath and James do, there is a more mainstream channel below that. And I'm not saying below as in it's not as good, I'm just saying it caters for a different
market. Yeah.
And they, you know, these people do have to be quite consistent with their offer. They might, you know, we work really hard with people like training their staff. Now, we're not always able to do that with everybody, and staff aren't brilliantly trained always. So if you don't have it's great when you've got a patron like Keith, who can turn up and go, hey, try this, it's great, don't worry about it, trust me, and they will trust him. Whereas, you know, if you've got a young kid, 18 years old, going, I know we're out of stock of that, how do you pronounce it, Malbec? You know, and it's like, you know, you're asking people to do the impossible. So, but I think the best thing that at the moment is really an understanding from the trade that there is a problem, that it is difficult for everybody, and really an attempt to work together on this. And I think working together on this is trying to be flexible and trying to act as you would like to be, treat people as you'd like to be treated. And I think that's really important. And we can't expect the end consumer who's spending good dollar to accept bad service. But what we can do is expect them to be polite and to be decent to people. And I think we have a danger in our trade that the whole thing's going to disintegrate into mob rule, and we don't want that. You know, the people who work in my sector need to work together on this one. There are fundamental problems with supply and hauliers, and what I don't need is other companies running around my accounts spreading rumours and trying to nick my business. And I'm not going to do that to other people. And I think if people are doing that, then it's a bit of a sad state of affairs.
It's a case we all need to sort of be in. We're all in the same boat, and if you're struggling, exactly, they've got the same problem. So I think there's it's the old be kind kind of message, isn't it?
Because if you start off with that, Ed, then the other things start to work themselves out. It's like, you know, if your first reaction is to start shouting and screaming, you're probably never going to get anywhere. If your first reaction is to do what Heath does and actually phone up your company and say, okay, I understand you've got a problem, how do we work this out? And I think we're going to have to do that over the next, say, I don't think it's going to go away before September. I think we might see some levelling out, and things will get easier and we'll get used to things. But actually, it's going to be difficult for quite a while. I mean, we are working extraordinarily hard to get as much stock as we can into the country, and actually the thing that's holding us back is physically not being able to do it. It's not because we don't want to. So understanding and working together, that's got to help. Because I can't solve the other bits.
John, I thought you could. I thought you had a magic wand.
I can't get my Spanish wine that's sitting on the dockside waiting to be shipped.
I've got an idea. Road trip.
What, for the entire industry?
Yeah. 18 ton. Couple of bottles
well, I'm conscious of time, and I think on that note, I think I will leave this one here. But John, thank you very much for that.
Thanks, John.
Absolute pleasure.
Cheers, mate.
Absolute pleasure. See you soon, guys.
Cheers.
This is a lock-in podcast for myself, Ed Beddington, Heath Ball and James Cuthbertson. We're now going to discuss one of the biggest challenges facing the sector at the moment, staffing. With us for this session is James Ellis-Smith from Hospitality Recruitment Specialist One Avenue. James, thanks for joining us.
You're very welcome.
I mean, it's all a bit of a mess at the moment, isn't it? We've got a perfect tsunami of trouble, people moving on, less overseas workers due to COVID and Brexit, and perhaps some chickens coming home to roost as well, which I think, Heath, you have touched on recently many times. So, I mean, James, just from a recruitment perspective, how are you seeing things at the moment?
Yeah, I think it's probably the toughest market for my clients that it's pretty much ever been. I think that, you know, there's things that we can all be doing better, but, you know, the dropout from people taking other positions while being on furlough and not coming back to the industry has been massive, especially in the more junior side of things. Mm. The position on people when they've been taking furlough, gone back to Europe and decided not to come back to the UK, another massive part of it. Mm. So, and then, you know, where people do have the need, it's very hard to get management or get anybody to leave a job to go and work for a new job because they're in a stable position. So yeah. It is a challenge.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, your client's got to have a megahorn about what they're good at.
Yes.
They've got to get that out.
Yeah. I mean, what advice are you giving to people at the moment then when it comes to attracting staff?
It's all about ensuring that they're communicating. When we get a candidate across to them, you know, you've got to sell your business to that candidate. It's not just a one-way street. You know, you're not just looking at that candidate and interview going, why is this guy going to be good for my business? You've got to work that out pretty quickly. And then you've got to make sure you're telling that candidate why your business is good for them. And that's absolutely key. What we're finding is, you know, is if you can get your staff to put stuff on your own website about why they're enjoying working there, you know, what's the culture like within your business, more from them than the management, then that's going to really help you. Just be an open book.
I mean, Heath, I mean, how are you finding the recruitment at the moment, and James as well? I mean, what's your situation?
I think it's like we're only looking for junior floor staff right now, just because we're so busy. We've actually no one lost their job. Everybody came back to work. And what's been really good at the Red Lion right now is we've taken a couple of people who are on furlough at other restaurant jobs. They've come up and worked for us and gone, actually, I really like it here, and the money's better. And it's a nice place to work. So we picked up two new chefs on the kitchen. Three new guys who are really good levels who had probably never been...
Would have been exposed to you.
Yeah, wouldn't have been exposed to us because they would have just been quite happy in their jobs. So, and well, you know, one guy, one of my head chef's brother, I've been trying to get him for years and he got shafted by his employer after 12 years of working for him. Just basically did a dirty on him with furlough and all that. And now he's working for me and I've probably for the first time got a really strong kitchen team up there. But finding... like kids to wait tables and stuff, nah, they don't work. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? So that's a bit of a struggle. So but it seems problem is we're so busy. Pub, you know, got two gardens. It's busy.
Yeah,
and all my
yeah.
staff are working overtime as it is.
So you've got to have the staffing resources are more in demand than ever because you've got to have more people to service this, and we're struggling to.
And you want good people as well. You know, I mean, there's loads of like flaky rubbish people, but you need strong.
Why were you looking at James when you said that?
Just because I'm flaky and rubbish.
There's too many Jameses here.
I was going to say that James. I mean, yeah, we're going to differentiate, aren't we? It's I could think of a way, but no, we won't. I mean, James, what about you? I mean, how are you finding things?
Same as Heath, really. But we're quite lucky around here on reputation. We've had people come to us from other employers again around about that have been not looked after in the last year and have heard about what we've done and how we've treated people and. have instantly came in here and found out that it's absolutely right. They're paid well.
Well, we also advertise when we say, we say on our advertisement that no one lost their job during furlough. Yeah. Everybody's been kept on. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Put on the advert.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Advertise
that. That's absolutely key. You've got to have a clear message.
Well, Gordon Ramsay, what's he writing? Well, I got rid of 50% of my workforce.
And now he's trying to open up how many sites?
50.
Yeah, 50 sites. And I can say it, I recently took a general manager out of his business and he was very happy to leave and go to a better place to work. Mm. What goes around comes around.
Yeah, definitely. Mm.
I think that the other thing that we've got to talk about is the opportunity for a career. I think that it's so important that people understand you can start as a waiter and within a year and a half you can be earning 30 grand, 40 grand, potentially, and there's very few, you go and work in an office, you're not going to get that kind of
quick, not that express.
Well, I mean, you guys have a great story, don't you, with Lydia, the GM here, starting off as a KP.
16 KP, she's now nearly 21.
She's 21, though.
No, just about this year.
She's only 20.
She's 20, yeah. And she's earning, what's she earning now? What's she earning now?
It takes about 40, 45 grand a year.
Yeah. You see, that's absolutely fantastic. And it's getting that message out there, not to people that just work in hospitality, not to people that just on your group within LinkedIn, but getting it further out there so people understand that, listen, this is a great career and you can earn a lot of money very quickly.
Well, I've got a guy who works for me at the Red Lion. He worked there part-time and then he went off and did his, he makes shoes, posh shoes, made to measure. He was doing that for years and he makes more money working as a barman at my place than he does making five grand shoes.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And what's he enjoying more?
Being a barman.
Yeah.
Exactly. Making shoes. No, sorry.
Yeah, but he's more flexible in his time and stuff. And I think that we've got to change the perception of what it is in this country, and I think
that's the other thing. And I know you wrote something for us, or James, one of you wrote something for me on this, in terms of that kind of attitude of, this is a career, this is something that's
just a transient.
I mean, and as I said at the start, is this a sense that the chickens are coming home to roost or something? Because we've not really treated people particularly well.
There's so many bad employers in our sector still, and you get the likes of Keith Knowles. And everyone's very, wants to talk about and does very well in his business at retention and training and all that stuff. There are some really good examples, but the problem is that still the majority of the operators see staff as transient. Why would I invest in them? They're going to be here today, gone tomorrow. And I would say that most of the FTSE 100 companies, most of the chief execs there have probably worked in hospitality at one time or another when they're at uni or what have you, and have probably got a really bad dim view of it.
Well, when I came over,
exactly that reason,
when I came over to the UK, it was always Aussie bartenders and Kiwi bartenders. Mm. Now they're all in finance. You know what I mean? You don't see any backpackers coming to do that and work in a pub anymore. They've all, it's sort of like there's a different level of change in the way it's worked out.
It's definitely a cultural thing in this country. I remember my mum, when I started working at Ask, I was a part-time job while I was going for jobs in the city, funnily enough. But I loved it. You can't do that. What are you doing?
And then there's that mum test, though, isn't it? And it was always that way. I remember my younger brother was probably the most academic out of the four of us. And
just the one who collects Star Wars characters.
No, it's different. He does other things. We don't talk about that. But he was at university, he wanted to do astrophysics and all the rest of it, and he came home to my mum and said he wanted to be a chef. And she was absolutely horrified.
Yeah.
It was the last thing she would have wanted him to do. And it was always that sort of mum test of going, when you can turn around and say to mum, "Oh, I'm going to go into hospitality," and they go, "Brilliant, that's great." We've just not hit that though.
Imagine when you said journalist.
Oh, I know, she was
just, you forget that look,
devastated.
That look, absolutely.
Actually, to be fair, she was probably, it was probably a step up from what she was expecting for me, so
that's true. Yeah, that's true.
I was going to follow in James Cuthbertson's footsteps and
get fired from everywhere.
did you see this Twitter backlash the other day? Did you read that with Fred and the
talk us through it, Heath.
Well, so Fred put up and he was talking about...
It's Fred Syriac.
Talking about hospitality, and he said the reason that people don't work, and he gave it a big explanation about the whole thing. And this guy charges in and goes, "Let's be honest here, Fred. Hospitality is a second or third choice job for people who never got their chance, acting like a high-skilled job, delivering a bit of dinner to the table." And then obviously that just kicked off. And then that's why I saw a lot of people on Twitter talking about, you know, I started as a glass collector and now I run, you know, Oakman, Innsky, Peter, and all these people talking about their career and progression. Because, but the problem is a lot of people look down at hospitality and they look down at you like that.
Well, it's look at the way they talk to you.
Oh, I mean, yeah, well, we talk to him like that as well.
I've got some well-heeled customers in Highgate, and I had this guy once, and comes in, he says, can I get a table? I said, sorry, sir, we're fully booked. And he went, what about that one? I hate playing, what about that game? But I said, oh, fully booked, fully booked, fully booked. And then I said, sir, we're fully booked. And he looked me up, and I was in jeans and a t-shirt. He looked me up and down like a piece of shit, and he said, are you the manager? I said, no, actually, I'm the owner. And he went, you think you'd be better dressed?
Well, yeah, the point.
I was wearing an Iron Maiden t-shirt, funny enough. Slim fit.
Which Ed has a really ill-fitting one today.
Slim fit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just.
But that's the problem. They look at you like, you know what I mean? Like they treat you like it's 1832, Mississippi Delta. You're there, and they look at you like you're a piece of shit.
Yeah.
It's just not, you know, and that's the problem. We need to change that in this country.
But the only way you change that is by getting the stories out there, and not just within our own community. And the problem is, the biggest problem we have right now, everyone's broadcasting it.
Like, to ourselves.
We're just boring it.
Well, we're doing it right now, and this is the tragedy of it. You know, we say this regularly, don't we? You know,
but that's why Joe Rogan's asked to come back next week.
You keep bringing this person up. I have no idea.
That's why we're on the Joe Rogan show next week. We're going there. We're going to talk about it. We're going to go to Texas.
Yeah. Good luck with that. Yeah. Anyway, it's not... there is that element. But what can we do then? How can we get this message out?
Like James said, we need more success stories.
We
need mainstream media to report on the success stories.
100%. And right now, we probably have more mainstream media than we've ever had staffing, right?
Yeah.
But how often are you hearing that person, you know, whether it's Kate Nichols or whatever, and don't get me wrong, she's done an amazing job, but like, but how often do you hear her telling people that story about
the
biggest opportunity we've ever had.
About 10 years ago, I think I sat on a group, it's called the Perceptions Group, and it was Kate Nichols, it was Nick Bish, it was a bunch of kind of industry, you know, opinion leaders, and the idea was to try and
Were you taking notes?
Yeah. Okay. And I was doing teas and coffees, actually.
Okay,
substitute got fired for. But the idea was that every company would pay a percentage into this pot, and the pot would be used to change the perception. And of course, it didn't get off the ground because everyone's got different agendas, and as we have with our hospitality, you know, our associations, no one really works together. No one really wants to work together. They all have their own agenda and thing they're doing. And truthfully, it's
frustrating because you said we don't have the story. We do have the stories because, I mean, it's like any industry can do this, can't they? I mean, whether it's, you know, a greengrocer, you know, all these kind of things, if you're an entrepreneur, you're an entrepreneur. Whatever sector you work in, you know, you can start out, you can go work behind the bar, wash pots, collect glasses, whatever, work your way up into a position where actually, you know what, you end up running an empire of 80-odd pubs, you know, or do a Tim Martin, all these kind of things, and turn around and say everyone should come back from Europe to work for me, but I'll get into that. But I mean, there is that. We have these stories, we have these people. This is the irony, and it's frustrating that we don't seem able to communicate that.
James's point was really good because you can't, I don't think there's another industry you can go through the ranks as quick here.
Well, look,
not because the attrition rate's quite hard around you typically, but if you've got anything
look
about
at Dave,
you can do
look
well.
At David Page at Pizza Express back in the day. He started as a 16-year-old kid and ended up owning Pizza Express. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
And that's, you know, back in the, I don't know, when did I start working for Ask Us Easy's? Mid-90s, you know, we had four restaurants. Like I say, started as a part-time waiter, ended up having an estate of about 60 restaurants. You know, in the space of 10 years, you know, that's a hell of a lot of responsibility. Yeah. You know, and I don't know many industries where you can go that quick, you know. With having, you know, and also, you know, the opportunity, financially the opportunities, when you make a successful company, right, companies will tie you in and you can do incredibly well. And everybody thinks that hospitality is so poorly paid. Well, no, it's not. If you're a true success, you're going to do incredibly well. If I'm sitting around this table, I don't think, obviously we've had quite a tough year this last year. But financially, I think we haven't done too badly out of hospitality, right?
Yeah, my helicopter's on the roof and it hasn't flown in a while. But let's
not dig into that one.
I just dress badly, that's all.
I think the other area, and I'm slightly conscious of time, we could talk about this for quite a while, but the other area that just very briefly we've seen, and maybe James and Heath, you can talk about this, is we've seen operators adjusting their operating hours. So St Austell have said, you know, they're going to reduce operating hours. Edmund Inkin at Eat Drink Slim has changed his business's operating hours to give staff a better work-life balance.
But also, but we've seen that with Michelin star restaurants, with Sat Bains, people doing that. But also, they're probably, it's the perfect time to look at your business and go, you know what? Mondays, we did 300 quid every Monday for the last 30 years. We can use COVID as an excuse. Let's cut the hours.
Yeah, totally that. And it's a bit like prices as well, isn't it? Whereas a year, 18 months ago, everyone knew the price of that pint. Yeah. They've had 18 months to forget about it. Just knock it up a bit. We've talked about that before, haven't we? Because they won't notice.
Yeah.
But there's definitely that hiatus has allowed a reset. And you've had time to think about your business.
Yeah.
And save on costs too. You know? Totally that.
The problem is we can do that while we're not paying business rates and our rent's probably being reduced or protected by rent moratorium.
Yeah.
But this is all going to come to us soon.
There's a big chain out there that do restaurant late night bars, own about 40 sites, and they're changing their whole GM rotas to going to 4-day working weeks, 3 days off, because they work so late. And they're doing that across the board now and trying to create that bit better of a work-life balance, so things are definitely changing on that.
Yeah, definitely stuff we need to be thinking about as an industry, and not just talking about and sort of amongst ourselves bitching about it. There's actual practical things that we could be doing.
We talked earlier about advertising and some thoughts on that from you, James, in terms of things that mistakes people are making when advertising for jobs. That was really interesting.
100%. I think that it frustrates me enormously when I see clients and they're recruiting junior staff, like floor staff, and they're not putting salaries and actual money down on what their guys are earning, not just their base rate but the tips as well. Make sure you get the actual OTE that those guys are earning, and it will shock people. And you will get people with personality coming into your business. They might not have that kind of waiter experience and stuff like that, but they will have personality. And you, as long as you've got a good training system, get them in, train them up. Put the numbers down on those ads.
Yes, not just competitive salary.
Nah.
Just get it, nail it. If you're paying well, shout about it.
Absolutely, shout about the tips.
Perfect, brilliant. 100%. Okay, guys, well, that is pretty much out of time for that one, so I'm going to have to leave that one there. James, thank you very much.
No worries.
You're listening to the Lock In podcast, and we are at the end of this week's episode. So, a lot of stuff we've discussed in this week's session. I think lots of challenges we're facing. I mean, last thoughts, guys. What are we thinking?
I think Emma was good. I think she's a good voice for the industry. I think it's going to be a shit show for the next few weeks. I just think you can't predict too much. I think we just need to roll with the punches and put a smile on and serve pints.
I mean, one of the interesting things that really stood out for me, Heath, was you were talking about your experiences of being in operation, or being out and on holiday and seeing how it is for some operators, and the fact that you had to wait 35 minutes to be served in the pub. Off recording, you also were complaining about a customer who was complaining to you about having to wait 38 minutes
from
to be
main
served.
From Main away, Edward. He'd sat down, he'd been drinking. If you don't like the friends you're with, go to McDonald's, have a fast meal and go home. So 38 minutes
you
from Main away.
You weren't particularly accommodating about this man's complaint about the length of time. When it was you, when the boot was on the other foot.
Yeah, but hold on. I'd been sat at a table with no drinks.
No one's come over and said hello.
I've got two young kids climbing over the bloody place, and there's no...
Maybe that's why they weren't coming to serve.
But here's the rub, right? They spent most of their time telling people they weren't doing food, because only if you had a booking. They could have put a sign up and done that. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I think the whole industry is stretched. If everybody's going to holiday this year in the country, I think I'd hate to be on the coast of England trying to, you know, when I went, we went to a meeting the other day down in Brighton. It was like being on the beaches of Falaraki. It was just,
it is heaving, isn't it? I think everyone's feeling it's that sort of perfect storm of lots of people. No one can go anywhere, so they're staying local or they're holidaying. And I mean, it's tough, isn't it?
It's awful. I thought just on your question, I think Emma was great and finally got some admission and answered a straight question about the government not really having an understanding of the industry, the trade. And I think James's points about recruitment were great, about, you know, show me the money.
Yeah.
It's a competitive industry out there. and you know, what you're going to earn, what are the conditions, and sell yourself. Because that's always been a thing I've said, that interviews are a two-way street, and for too long it's been employers just looking at potential employees, just thinking, are you good enough, and not giving any thought to whether they might want to work for you or not. So that has changed, been changed for the good.
And John was surprisingly coherent then.
For a guy who drinks sherry at midday, I think so,
Midday?
Ah, 11 a.m.
That's good to say. I
mean. Midday somewhere.
But you know what I mean? I think, you know, I mean, obviously, but it, the whole, like we were talking about, the supply chain, it's not just them, it's everything. You were out the other day walking around Hayward's Heath trying to find lemonade.
And the guy said, are you from a bar? And I was like, yeah. He said, all the bars trying to buy lemonade at the minute because they're not getting any lemonade. I was like,
right, okay.
Really?
Nothing's coming into the, you know, like John said, it's just, you can buy the stuff, you just got to get it into the country. And, you know, if your driver gets stuck here for whatever reason, it's no point.
You wonder about, you know, perishables as well, you know, when you're trying to get stuff in. If you were bringing perishables into the country, knowing that you'd have a problem, or not a return route back out, which is the way where they make the money, right? They come in with a full yard and you need to take it back. Why would you take the chance?
But even when I was speaking of Flying Fish that we use down in Cornwall, they're not taking on any new customers. They're really stretched getting fish in, and every fishmonger I'm speaking to is having real trouble with fish. And you know, for so long it's all gone abroad and all that. Now we're eating it, and you know, now it's a good time to be buying British lobsters, all sorts. But I think it's going to be like, they're going to definitely push back that. I can't see them opening on the 21st.
Is that the prediction? Delay?
Well, you were,
I was going to say, who's winning the bet on that one?
Because I'm winning the bet.
We did actually
so
have
far.
A bet.
I'd almost cash out at half. I'd almost give him half now.
I've looked at the price. I've looked at the price of Quintarelli Amarone. The current vintage is coming in at £290 a bottle, James.
Okay. What more vintage do we agree on?
04. But I don't think
it's
they are.
Looking good, James.
I think, honestly, what, the Euros are going to be on, they're just going to let pubs go back to normal.
No.
And I'll tell you what will happen then. Then suddenly we'll have a massive spike again. There'll be another variant. And we'll be looking at August, like an autumn lockdown. And the problem is half this bloody country likes a lockdown. It's a novelty.
A little bit of furlough. Lovely. Bit of sunshine. Get drinking in the garden.
Find the vein. Get me the vein. Yeah, let's get a furlough in there. I'm hooked.
What a way to wrap up.
I always like to say we like to end it on a more jovial upbeat note, but you two fuckers.
No, that's how we roll.
Wait, so what are we saying? 21st of June? Not happening?
No.
Like Emma said, they're not even
talking
to them.
They've already told us it's a 2-week
I'd love if it was. I mean, the trouble is, though, I mean, if it doesn't, then, you know, there's going to be some businesses that just can't cope anymore.
Nightclubs and late-night venues.
Well, in the future, I can see it. Like, do you remember going to a nightclub? Mm. And your kids will be like, what are you two talking about? Do you know what I mean? It's going to be like that. It has, honestly, COVID's reshaped drinking culture in this country, and the hospitality sector, and the government are enjoying the way it's going, you know, and people don't mind. Like you said, the price of a pint. Do they remember the price of a pint?
No.
Do they remember going out to late night clubs? Do they remember that?
No.
At least you can still have a fag outside the pub.
You know, in New Zealand, you can't smoke in public. In New Zealand, you've got to go home and smoke. It's like a deadly sin now. And it's going to be like this over here. You know?
Wow.
And that, you know, the smoking ban of 07, that was one of the first nails in the coffin for pubs. Mm. Then we had the recession. But this is another one, isn't it? Oh, you can't even stand out the front of a pub and have a fag. Ugh.
But the microchips that you get in your second dose of the vaccine will clear your mind that you don't worry about that stuff.
What are we talking about? It's
fine. When's yours? Talking about?
Yeah, it's Friday, actually. Here's the thing, right? Talk about snowflakes. Somebody the other day who's booked the afternoon off after their vaccine and the day after, just in case they don't feel well.
I've had it.
Is that Heath?
I've had it with staff. The same thing.
Seriously.
But they love this. They like, do you have any side effects? They love the drum. Which one have you had?
Mm, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, God. Thank God we're not at war.
Well, again, you try to get it positive.
You just reel it back into. I think on that note,
the yin to your yang.
Yeah,
I've got to go back to London.
Right then, on that note, let's draw a line under it. So please do subscribe, please do, even after that. Share on social, like, tell all your friends.
Come on, it sounds interesting.
I'm struggling to build up the enthusiasm after your.
If I fall asleep driving, listen to this
kind of thing. So it's not my fault. Anyway, that is it for this week. We will be back next week. We will be doing a taste test and some other stuff as well. But until then, stay safe. We will speak to you soon.
Bliss is absolute.
That says, introducing John Graves of Bibendum on the ukulele.
I don't think it'll play, will it?
Yeah, go on.
Will it play?
Yeah.
Go for it.
Oh, hang on a minute. Give me a couple of seconds. I'll find something to play.
We'll fill for you. We'll fill for you. James, what's your favourite ukulele song?
Silence.
There's only
golden.
One ukulele song.
When I'm cleaning windows, surely.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. It goes something like this. Let's see if you can hear it. Okay. You might not be able to hear it, but.
And then you're like, oh, yeah. He's a fucker. He's put it down there and he's playing this on the thing. I know exactly what he's doing.
John's a musician.
So, can you hear that?
We can.
Yeah, that was brilliant.
So, yeah, I mean, you are basically the Lewis's answer to George Formby.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Well, what can I say?
High praise indeed, I think. Right, I'm going to stop recording now.